Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The Microsoft IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started. Scott, another episode.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Have you seen the SQL Operations Studio? Played around with this thing yet?
SQL Operations Studio. I have not. Is this in Azure or is it an app?
It is a tool. It is a preview tool.
I know lots of tools.
Well, yeah, I might even be one of them. So SQL Operations Studio, it's a free tool that runs on Windows, Mac, OS, and Linux, and it is managing your SQL server, Azure SQL, and Azure SQL database warehouses or Azure SQL data warehouses.
So is this like SSMS times or the next gen SSMS? Is this like replace SSMS?
Sort of, but it's all just a T-SQL editor. So if you've ever seen DMS, the data migration, DMA, data migration assistant, I'm going to put this in the super secret chat so you can have a look and go see it.
Just downloaded it. So what does this... Oh, I think that's another link. I'm downloading it right now.
Well, it lets you back up and restore. It lets you run queries. Did I mention that it has a SQL editor in it?
Interesting.
Yep. So you can perform some common management tasks, such as writing SQL queries. I don't know if I ever mentioned that, but it does that. It has support for snippets in it. And it has some dashboards too. If you've ever seen, it has dashboards. So basically what you do is you build TSQL queries that they call widgets. So you can take the query, make it into a widget, and then take those individual widgets, or let's call them tiles, and be trendsetters. And then you just turn those into visualizations, and then you can pin them onto dashboards. So you can build awesome server and database management dashboards.
Nice. Did you really just call them tiles in a trendsetter?
I did.
Those two don't belong. I'm pretty sure tiles was Windows 8. Isn't that like, we don't talk about that anymore?
No. I was thinking Power BI.
Okay. I guess that's allowed. But I'm pretty sure tiles kind of originated with the whole Windows 8, Windows Phone era.
Maybe, yeah, you know. Oh, another cool thing that this tool has is an integrated terminal.
All right, I'm opening it.
So if you're used to Visual Studio Code with the command palette, guess what? This has the same exact command key. It might even look a lot like Visual Studio Code and DMA and all these other things that are built on Electron.
So why... Well, I guess because there's a whole bunch of other stuff in it, kind of like Teams. You can tie Office 365 in here with Teams and Electron.
Yeah, you would wonder why they didn't just make this like an...
Part of Visual Studio?
Add-on for Visual Studio Code, right? Because that's what it is. You put the database connector in there. It's even got the Git integration and all the other things. But yeah, you know, you put server groups in. You do your source control. It supports Windows authentication, so we can do curb and all those good kinds of things. And it generally does just fine, even on Mac OS, because, hey, you can join your Mac to a domain.
It is a total ripoff of Visual Studio Code.
It's not a ripoff. It's an Operations Studio parentheses preview close parentheses preview.
Because why not just do this? So they already have, because I've used the SQL... add-in. They have a SQL add-in for Visual Studio Code that I've used to work with SQL before, but it doesn't have all the other fancy stuff.
Yep. But hey, here you go, and here it is. So this is not intended to replace SSMS or SQL Server Management Studio, not that short messaging thing you get on your phone, but it will be the next generation multi-OS CLI and GUI tool. Fully open sourced. That's nice. And yeah, it's out there and ready to go.
Looks like they kind of took like their MS SQL for Visual Studio Code and just layered a lot friendlier UI on top of it.
Yeah. Well, they turned it into a purpose-built tool for managing SQL in a similar interface, right? So particularly when you think about having all the linting and highlighting for your SQL statements and then the same kind of backend for add-ins and things like that, it'll become extensible for them and generally be a good thing. So you got, yeah, server and workgroup management and all that good kind of stuff. Particularly interesting that they get the free source code control and all that's just kind of picked in and ready to go. So you do get the built-in Git integration. So same kind of thing, like open a folder like you would do in VS Code and then just start editing and you can do push, pull, all that good kind of stuff straight out of the text editor.
Time to go start playing with it.
Picks up the integrated terminal as well, if you didn't notice that one. So it does pick up Bash and PowerShell. I haven't tried to add the Azure account add-in in there yet. So I have to do some playing with this one as well.
I haven't logged into SQL Server yet. I can't remember what all mine are. I got to go find an Azure one. It would be nice though, you're right about the whole domain thing, if you could like put in Windows credentials instead of it just trying to take your Windows credentials. Or put,
want to have your cake and eat it too.
I know, it's just, you're going to tell me it's just preview.
That seems to be the thing that all the Microsoft product managers tell me when I complain about things on Twitter. Lay off, it's preview.
They just eventually ignore me. So I have an Office, have you heard about my Office 365 ticket I have open?
No, another one?
Well, what was the last one you heard about?
Probably something we shouldn't talk about, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so this one I have... I don't think I've told you about this one. Have I told you about my rules issue with Outlook?
Yes.
It's still that one. Yeah, if this turns into the episode, which I think it might, because this could just be kind of a random fun episode. So I have this issue with Outlook, and any listeners that actually hear this, if they do, are more than welcome to chime in. But I have an email address. I have my company email address, and I have, I don't know, I have 10 different aliases on it. The other day, I discovered rules sent to the primary email address I use for work. So it's my primary SMTP address. It will not ever trigger a rule. So it doesn't matter what rule it is. I can specify it to that email address. I can look at the headers in the email. I can say, just apply this rule to any email that shows up in my inbox. OWA, Office Client, doesn't matter where it is. It will not trigger a rule. If it's sent to any of my aliases, so any of my secondary SMTPs, the rule triggers just fine. It'll move messages. It'll categorize messages, label messages, whatever it wants to do. So I thought, okay, maybe it's just my primary SMTP. If I flip my primary SMTP in one of my aliases, it still doesn't work, not on the primary SMTP, but on that very specific email address. So for some bizarre reason, I have a single email address in my Office 365 account that will not trigger any rules in Outlook.
I think you just need to delete the email address.
I do, but everybody has it. I did think about just swapping it, just changing my primary and leaving it as an alias. And eventually, once I reply to enough emails, maybe people will forget about my one that used to be my primary SMTP. But it's kind of annoying because rules can't get... And I've spent hours on the phone now with support and... Office 360, they try. They really do try. I've had good experiences. This is a bad one. I probably spent like 6 or 8 hours on the phone. After 6 or 8 hours on the phone, they were finally like, oh, we've been trying to fix the wrong issue. We thought there was a specific rule you couldn't get to run.
That was nice of them.
I'm glad after spending a day of my time, they realized that they were trying to fix the wrong issue. They were trying to fix some other issue that I wasn't even describing. I don't know. I just got an email today that it got escalated to the next layer of support. And when do I have time today? We'll see. But that is my latest Office 365 support ticket with my really goofy exchange rules.
At least you have support. So you've got that going for you.
I do. And again, this is one of those bad experiences. I have had some really good ones where I will say they seem to have gotten more responsive. Some people say they have to wait 2 or 3 days to hear back from them on a ticket. By and large, I hear back from them really quick on the ticket. Sometimes they can solve it right away. Sometimes it takes a while. And granted, this one is probably one of the stranger tickets, at least I've seen.
Your support, there is no hardline SLA. So it's basically kind of like a best attempt kind of thing, but it really depends on your licensing level. So are you a 365 business plan? Are you on an eSKU? Are you a government customer? What does it happen to be? And then what is the severity of your ticket, right? So is it non-critical? Is it high? Is it critical? Because really there's no commitment for non-criticals. Like they're just kind of out there forever. Highs can be next day for phone support. And hey, if it's high, but high might need a little bit more the next day, or you get down to 1 hour for criticals. But again, there's no real, those are best case scenario kind of things.
It's interesting. I have an advantage of that I'm just one person. So if I really want to, I can say, hey, this issue affects all my users.
Have you ever tried just calling yourself and consulting with yourself?
Yes. It's usually busy or I get voicemail. I remember the first time I did that when I was a kid. I was like, Mom and Dad, what happens if I pick up the phone and call myself? And I will date myself. I think it was on a rotary dial phone. We did actually have one of those. I remember before it was all touch tone and it was a phone on the wall and it was like, stick your finger in the dial and spin it for all the phone numbers. And sure enough, it was busy when I called myself.
Oh boy, rotary phones. You're killing me.
Yeah, that was back before dial-up even existed. Like, I think at that point in time, I was young, but it was, I think we maybe still had rotary dial because you actually had to pay the phone company to go from the rotary dial to the touch tone. But you need a touch tone to get on the internet. So there was a brief time there, I think, where there was an overlap where we hadn't actually paid to get touch tone yet, but the internet was just starting to come out and I couldn't get on the internet because we didn't have touch tone.
And yeah.
And I'm old. But I'm not as old as the other Cloud Show guys.
You got that going for you.
Yes, I do. So you got a new mug too.
I did. I'm enjoying this thing. So I won one of the weekly Azure trivia contests. So if anyone has ever been out on the Twitters, and there is a weekly contest that the Azure product group does called Azure Trivia. So you go out and look for hashtag Azure Trivia, and they ask a question once a week. And if you answer the question correctly, they're just like ABC kind of things. And you end up in their list of winners and you're chosen out. They send you a little grab bag of stuff worth approximately $120 to $140. So you get some fun things. So I got a bunch of t-shirts a bunch of stickers. They all say winning at life and Azure Trivia. So life's good with some Woody t-shirts. But the really interesting thing they give you is an Ember coffee mug. So Ember mugs are these ceramic coffee mugs, and they have honking bases on them, like a really thick base at the bottom of the mug. And they're super heavy because it is a coffee mug with Bluetooth built into it. Because, you know, all of your coffee mugs should have Bluetooth. But that Bluetooth is there to communicate from a little temperature sensor that's built into the phone into the coffee mug and a little heating plate to go back to your phone and say, how warm would you like your beverage to be? So you set your temperature, you say, you know, I want this to be 140 degrees Fahrenheit, and it will keep your drink at that temperature for the entire time that it detects liquid in the cup.
Wow. I need one of these.
It is very fancy and very useless. It's really cool, but it's a really small cup. So I like big cups of coffee, right? Like I hit the big button on the Keurig, or when I go to the coffee shop, it's like, give me whatever your largest gargantuan thing is. The more ounces, the better, preferably 64, and we'll be good to go. And this thing is a 10-ounce mug. So being that it's a 10-ounce mug, it barely holds 8 ounces of liquid, especially if you want to add things like cream and sugar to your coffee.
Okay. So do you add cream and sugar to your coffee, or do you add coffee to your cream and sugar?
I am the latter.
So I'm assuming it's got a battery in it. Do you have to recharge it then every so often to keep whatever warming element is in there charged so it can keep your coffee hot, or?
It does have a battery, so it seems to burn down at about 25% a day at my current usage rate. So not too horrible.
No, that's not bad. And let's face it, your coffee mug usually stays on your desk, so to charge it every couple days probably isn't a huge deal.
Nope. So now I charge it on the desk. It's not dishwasher safe. That's kind of annoying. Got to go and like wash things by hand, you know. Yeah. We'll live with it.
So that being said, what is your ideal temperature now? Because I have no idea what my ideal temperature is for a cup of coffee. I would imagine you have this fine-tuned now. So you can go to any coffee shop and say, I want my coffee at 138.65 degrees, because now you know exactly what temperature you like your coffee.
According to the instructions, which, you know, I'm sure everybody RTFMs, but it is 135 degrees is kind of like the recommended thing. Like, hey, don't burn your mouth out. I find for a smart coffee mug, this is not the smartest mug in the world. So it does, like, it lets the temperature drop a little bit cooler before it starts heating things back up again. So I cranked the temperature up to its maximum of 145.
Okay.
It is slightly disconcerting to pick your coffee cup up and then always have it be warm. A little weird. Not going
to
lie.
It would be, because I would probably forget, because I'm used to doing stuff like this with a cup of coffee. By the time we're done, it's cold. So I just grab it up and I take a big old swallow of coffee. I can imagine you have to be a little bit more careful about that, because it does stay warm all day long.
It catches you off guard. But like I said, you don't get to take a big swig because it's not a really big cup. It's only 10 ounces.
Because then it's gone. Kind of like leaving a coffee cup in Florida. I think I've discovered that's the only thing one of the only things I like about Florida is I can get coffee in the morning. I can go golfing. If I don't finish my coffee, I leave it in the car. By the time I get done golfing 4 or 5 hours later, my coffee is still the exact same temperature in the car as when I left to go golfing 4 or 5 hours ago, because it just gets that hot.
Oh boy, you're a mess.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so if you haven't been able to tell, we had a plan that we were going to talk about. We have thrown it out the window. I don't know about you. I've been really busy. So when we're recording this, we have the SharePoint conference coming up in, we're leaving in like 2 days.
It's coming up quick here.
Yeah, so this will more than likely come out well after the SharePoint conference, because we're going to be doing a bunch of interviews in the next few days, and I'm guessing all of those will hit the podcast stream coming out of our podcast well before this one will, considering we've talked about a lot of random technology. Speaking of, I have some more announcements, some more interesting stuff. I sent you a screenshot of this. We actually made it onto Spotify. Did you know Spotify has podcasts?
I did. I didn't know you submitted us.
So we host our podcast through Blueberry. You got to like slur it, because it's like Blueberry, but they left out a whole bunch of random letters. It's like Blubrry. So say Blueberry, say Blueberry, whatever you, Blubbery. Guess it could, I don't know. No, there's no B in there. Anyways, through them, they have some inside track with Spotify, and they have a forum right in there where we host it. And again, that's where all our media is. Our website's all elsewhere. We just point everything to the media that's hosted there. But through them, we can actually go in and submit to Spotify, and they submit batches of podcasts into Spotify. And they've got some inside track with Spotify where they can get them approved and added to Spotify quite a bit quicker than if you go out and try to find Spotify's official podcast submission form. So I did that a while ago and really didn't get anywhere, never heard anything. I've heard it's really kind of random who they let in and who they don't. But it sounds like if you go through Blueberry and submit it there, they will just accept like the whole batch that Blueberry sends them of podcasts.
It's good to have low friends in high places.
Yes. So a little bit of inside knowledge. And if you're a Spotify listener and you want to start listening to us on Spotify instead of whatever else you're using, you can go out and find us in Spotify now. Search for the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro podcast. I found us by searching for Office 365. They seem to do a little bit better job than like iTunes does of picking up various words from either your podcast, your description, or maybe different episodes. For whatever reason, I have never been able to find us in iTunes very well if I search for Office 365.
Oh, check that out. That is very freaking cool. Who knew?
Yeah.
I'm going to follow that.
I know. I haven't checked if we've gotten... So we have had some reviews in iTunes too. Some people have actually left us comments and we've never actually said anything about it. Should we go see what people are saying about us in iTunes? It's always dangerous, right? They say never read your own reviews.
I don't even have iTunes. I couldn't, I wouldn't be able to open it.
Sad story. I have recently switched to iTunes. Primarily,
that's not a sad story. It just makes you a sad person.
Okay, so I'm a sad person.
Podcasts.
But it primarily had to do with the fact that Amazon Music is going away. Well, the part of Amazon Music that I actually leveraged a lot. Are you listening to our podcast in the background?
No, I clicked a button. I don't know.
So in Amazon Music, they used to let you could pay a little bit of extra and you'd get like the whole Apple Music thing and all of that. And then they would let you also upload like 250,000 of your own songs and they would host them up in Amazon Music. So essentially it was all my cloud hosted media, all my music, everything I could listen to. That is going away here shortly. I think at this point in time, if you have your own... Well, if you've renewed your subscription, you're good until your subscription expires. At this point in time, you can't even go get it anymore. And if your subscription renewed, I think, I don't remember when the deadline was, you couldn't get it anymore. So I had to figure out something else to do where I could host all my own music rather than hosting it here. Or, I mean, I suppose I could put it in OneDrive and use Groove to listen to my music. But I also wanted it combined with being able to go listen to the radio, like the different internet radio stations. Like I want to go listen to a whole bunch of not country, a whole bunch of, maybe I want an electronic or a dance mix or something like that. And iTunes and Apple Music was about the best alternative that I could find to Amazon Music the way it used to be.
I think you just get Spotify. So if you do Spotify, there is support for importing your local files from a desktop device, and then you can go ahead and pull them down on your mobile device and play them that way.
So my understanding, though, is they're not hosted in the cloud that way. Don't you always... I didn't think it actually uploaded them to Spotify. I thought it still had to do with having all that music locally.
It will sync them through. So if you actually choose to go to like your phone and sync it through, then it's there. So as long as your computer is always online, you're all set. So I have like a Media Center PC and that runs Plex and it does run iTunes and all that kind of stuff on it. But it sits in a cabinet in the middle of nowhere and I never look at it. And yeah, all that stuff just runs off there.
Got it. See, and I don't have that. That's my problem. I have my laptop. All my music sits on a NAS. I have one of the Synology NASs, but I can't use that to sync all my music up through Spotify. I don't believe.
Is there not a Spotify app for Synology? Come on.
I don't think so. I don't think there's... Is there one for QNAP? I don't think there's one for either one of them. So I guess that would be the other option, is to just host it all out of Plex and use Plex if I wanted to listen to that music. So in iTunes, yeah, we have 11 ratings in iTunes. Go us.
Cool. I only saw two, so you're further ahead of me.
So we have 11 ratings, but we only have two actual reviews.
I see.
We should start a competition. Yeah. So a couple reviews from, it looks like Meeting, MTG0711. This was a long time ago. He left us one back in July of 2017. Yeah. He said, Ben and Scott have done a tremendous job providing IT pros with entertaining, yet highly relevant and an informative show. Up until this episode when everything went downhill. But he looks forward to every new episode. I hope he still feels that way after a year. And then somebody else, SBGLR. I'm not even going to try to turn that one into a word. But he said, I knew there had to be a podcast out there that spoke to Microsoft and the cloud in general from the perspective I live in for my job. I live in my job. Despite my best searches, I couldn't find anything, which means we're apparently doing a terrible job with our SEO. That quite fit the bill. But by pure luck, he stumbled across the podcast, and he's so glad for it. Great topics, excellent questions, And he appreciates the under 30-minute design. So, and he said, thanks for the great content. Again, hopefully up in the show. Eh, we'll see. We got to have one of these every once in a while, though, right?
Yeah, just every now and then.
I don't even know how to go find reviews in any of the other ones. In the Google Play Store, Spotify, or Stitcher, or I don't, what other ones are we on? I submitted to a bunch. Oh, my. Any other fun technology stuff you've been playing with or you want to talk about?
I have been heads down on some stuff for work, which I think will be super fun and super cool when it comes out, but I don't know that I'm allowed to talk about it too much right now. I'm trying to think of other fun stuff that's happened over the last week. We talked about SPC. We're going to that. Oh, let's see. There was some fun Azure stuff, but I don't think anybody probably cares about.
IT Pros kind of got the shaft with Build being a week ago because it was a whole bunch of developer-y stuff. There were a few cool things in there. What they're trying to do with Teams, it was a whole bunch of prototype hardware and some cool things. But there's a video. I'll throw that in the show notes. A really cool video about some things they're trying to do with meetings, leveraging hardware, software, Surface hubs, technology in the cloud.
They did have the new Surface Hub 2s. So that was not a Build announcement, but it did come up slightly afterward, like this week, I think. Yeah, May 15th, that one came out. So if anybody hasn't seen those yet, they're these, instead of being like a big monolithic 84-inch display, they're these little broken down little 50-inch displays. And then they have a 3:2 aspect ratio, and then you can combine up to four of them together in tiles.
Doing your tiles.
Well, no, that's actually what they called them for the Surface Hub. It's actually a really cool, nifty-looking device. I'm looking forward to spending... I'm going out to Seattle in a couple weeks, so maybe I can swing by like one of the experience centers or something on campus and see if they have any of these out yet and ready to go.
Yeah, I saw the announcement. I've been so busy. I haven't had time to look at them, but it does. It looks really cool. I love the super thin bezel.
Yeah, they're going to come out next year and they should be pretty nifty. So, well, the reason they do that, right, is so because you can combine up to four units and put them side by side and make yourself that really big display.
What, that probably ends up being like a ultra wide screen, like a 21:9 aspect ratio or something like that, it kind of looks like.
Well, let's see, it's a 3:2, so that would take you to a 12:8.
Close. 12:8, 24:16. Yeah. Huh. Very cool. I like the easel. I want one of these. I can just roll around my, well, maybe not. My kids would probably barrel into it.
They're probably going to be expensive. The other Surface Hubs were.
I know. I keep saying I need one for my office, but it's going to be a little while. All right. Well, we should probably wrap up now that we've sat here and talked about random technology. We need a good title for this show.
I already got you covered. Don't worry. You're all set.
Warn people what they're in for before they download this one.
Show notes for this one were easy. So anybody that's interested, you can go out and find show notes at mscloudITpro.com/episode64. You can follow us on Twitter. Ben is at Ben Stejink. I'm at Ciphertext, and we are at MS Cloud IT Pro.
Yeah, and sign up. We don't have a lot of people on our mailing list. We really don't spam you. We send out the show notes if you want to get show notes and links and all that in your email. But like this week, it's going to be too late for the SharePoint conference. But when we do things like the SharePoint conference, we'll be doing some live streams from there, or we will have done some live streams from there by the time you hear it. Some of that type of stuff too, we do shoot out an email. So every once in a while, there's some extra bonus stuff about, hey, go watch this live stream, or we're going to be at this conference, or information about that. So if you do want to stay up to date on some of that other random stuff too, feel free to sign up for a mailing list. We are GDPR compliant, Scott.
I was going to tell everybody that. I mean, it's a banner day for us.
Yes, the podcast is GDPR compliant, and it's before the 25th. We are recording this on the, I don't even know what the date is. We're recording this on the 18th. 7 days to spare, and I got us GDPR compliant.
Yeah. Now that you've said that, if anyone has any questions about GDPR, please don't send them to me, send them to Ben.
And I will forward them on to somebody else because GDPR is quickly turning into a four-letter word.
And with that, I'm out.
All right. We'll see you at the SharePoint conference, Scott.
All right, Ben.
Bye-bye. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.